Welcome to Banfield. Millions of American babies are in the struggle for their lives tonight, and it is all because of mistakes that we adults have been making for months. A severe formula shortage right across the country has sent families scrambling into overdrive. While trying to track down formula, parents have encountered empty shelf after empty shelf at the supermarkets and the stores. The reasons for the shortage: a massive recall, production shutdowns, and of course, that dreaded supply chain crisis. It is a perfect storm that sadly has no end in the immediate future. The producers of Similac are now attempting to move products from their factory in Ireland all the way to Michigan. But even that could take weeks before products actually hit the store shelves. The factory in Michigan shut down in February after regulators investigated possible contamination of Similac formula. The company issued a voluntary recall. The formula shortage has forced many retail chains to ration the supplies that they do have, meaning even when parents can find the formula they need, they can't buy enough to hold them over. Cue the price gougers. Those bottom feeders have now also entered the marketplace, many of them on third-party sites. This has gotten so bad that earlier today, President Biden met with manufacturers and suppliers, including Walmart and Target and Gerber, and announced a plan to cut red tape to expedite supply, to call on state leaders to crack down on those price gougers, and to increase imports. Here's the White House Press Secretary, Jen Psaki.
So what we need to do, and what you've seen the president announce earlier today, and I just reiterated, is steps we can take from here to increase supply, make sure it's on the shelves. That includes increasing imports. It also includes ensuring we're working with retailers, as the president did during his calls, to make sure that shelves are stocked.
Well, of course, hungry babies don't care what's being done to fix the problem 2 weeks or 3 weeks from now, and moms are resorting to desperate measures to feed their babies. Joining me now is Dr. Krupa Playforth. She is a pediatrician and a social media influencer known as the Pediatrician Mom. Okay, Doc, turns out you yourself are struggling to find formula for your baby. Help me sort of navigate, where is this going to go? How are women and families going to manage through this?
It's so stressful. Yes, I have a 10-month-old who is on a specialized formula, and we've been having a lot of trouble finding it. And I'm just one of many parents that are facing this issue.
Dr. Krupa, they're starting to make their own at home because they're desperate, because they can't find it. And I know, as having been a mom that used formula as well as breastfeeding, that is not safe.
It is absolutely not safe. I know. I understand the temptation. You know, formula is what our babies need to survive. And, you know, parents are willing to resort to desperate measures to try to make sure that their babies are fed. But there are certain things that we definitely recommend against, and making your own formula at home is one of those things.
Like, just let's be super clear about it. I mean, some people are using cow's milk, sometimes goat's milk. There is nothing that you can do at home to make your own formula. That is, I mean, is that a definitive line?
That is a line. You do not want to be trying to make formula at home. If you think about how formula is made, it's incredibly nutritionally dense. It's created in these sterile facilities. You cannot recreate that at home.
Okay, what about diluting? Because that's something else a lot of moms have done, knowing that the can is almost empty and they haven't got a fresh one. Diluting, it seems to be an emergency, but is it still wrong?
It's absolutely wrong. I understand wanting to make that formula last a little bit longer, but the trouble with diluting or mixing formula incorrectly is that you can end up with an imbalance in A, the nutrients, but also B, you can end up with electrolyte imbalances in your babies, and that can lead to seizures and all sorts of other health issues.
So what about, you know, you head to that store, we saw those shelves that were empty, but sporadically you see a couple other cans up there. If you're desperate and you are out, can you resort to switching brands or switching types of formula only because the only other option is nothing?
This is a great question. So for babies that are on a cow's milk-based formula, there are a lot of other options that are available. You know, a lot of people are reluctant to make the switch if they know that their baby is, you know, comfortable with one particular brand, but generic alternatives are great. For babies that are on more specialized formula, like mine, so if they have like a food allergy or if they have other underlying health issues, if they're premature, for those babies, it's a little bit harder to just simply make a switch, and I would caution parents against doing that without talking to their pediatrician.
Okay, so switching to another, you know, brand, as long as it is a lateral switch, the same type, the same issues, no allergies, no specifics needed, that is fine. That's not going to make the baby uncomfortable or sick.
So some babies are sensitive to the change, and you might notice for a few days that they are having a little bit of trouble adjusting, but that is still a better option than trying to resort to diluting or making your own formula or even switching to a cow's milk or some other product.
Okay, so I know you're a pediatrician and I know that you guys have samples that you give.
Yes.
I got samples from, you know, my pediatrician when I was breastfeeding and giving and supplementing with formula, whole other issue. But I'm guessing that even your samples might be in short supply. But can moms call their pediatricians and say, I am at zero and it's an emergency?
Absolutely. And I actually think not very many parents know that pediatricians do have supply that we hand out. So reaching out to your pediatrician if you're really struggling is absolutely a great first step. I know that some pediatricians have received donations from families. They also have, you know, contact with representatives from different brands that they can contact if a baby, for example, needs a very specific formula. So they can help you advocate.
Dr. Krupa Playforth, thank you so much. Pediatrician known as the pediatrician mom. So appreciate your information tonight. It's invaluable. Thanks.
Thanks.
So not every baby, as you just heard, can drink just any kind of formula. In fact, some formulas can be dangerous for some babies, and that's complicating the shortage even further for millions of parents. Desperate times call for desperate measures, and that's why Amber Sanders kicked into gear. Only her desperate measure, that's helping hundreds of other moms find the exact formula that they need for their babies. Amber started a Facebook group called Moms in Tennessee Looking for Formula. She needed formula for her own baby boy named Chevy, who was born in January. But now her group has over 400 members, mostly made up of moms, helping moms to feed each other's little ones. Here's how it works. If a mom is out there and sees a formula on one of those awful shelves, but it's not the one that she needs, she alerts the other moms in the group. And because there's going to be someone in that group who does need that formula that she has spotted. So basically, this is a formula network. Amber is with me now. And I understand you've got Chevy with you as well.
Wanted I
to
do.
See your live picture and see. Oh, I'm so glad. I can't believe he's up. Is he sleeping or is he awake?
A little bit of both.
With the glare of the Klieg lights, it's kind of hard. Well, listen, you know, I applaud you. I applaud you for what you're doing here. Are your moms in the Facebook group finding what they need together, or are you also discovering that the supply is getting tighter and tighter even since you started the group?
Well, most moms are able to find what they need. I know it is still getting, you know, worse and worse by the day, but luckily I've heard a lot of good things about the group so far.
So it seems, I'm only assuming, I mean, this wasn't your professional plan to be running a, you know, a Facebook group for moms. I think your plan was to be feeding Chevy and raising Chevy at this early stage. He's not even 4 months yet. But does this surprise you that this is happening right here in America, a first world country?
Yes, definitely. Especially with advances we are nowadays, I would never think a shortage of formula for a baby would happen.
So talk to me a little bit about your group, 400. Is it growing all the time, and is it growing outside of Tennessee? Because we're airing all over America right now, and I have a feeling some of the viewers will be saying, I want in.
Right. Well, we do. I have a couple people from Kentucky at the moment that are, you know, accessible to Tennessee, like the southern parts of Kentucky. So, I mean, surrounding states are more than welcome to join in because, I mean, a lot of us moms are willing to travel.
And have you heard of other states sort of taking your lead and saying, okay, Amber, we're going to do that, you know, for, say, Washington State or Nebraska?
I actually have seen some other Facebook groups that are doing it in other states, and that's one reason I decided to do one for Tennessee, because I was finding the formula for him, but they were wanting an arm and a leg to ship it, or, you know, it was, you know, completely in another state, like up north, that I couldn't get to it.
I have seen the offers to ship, which is amazing. Just quickly, you know, when a mom sees, you know, a type of specialized formula on the shelf and she doesn't need it but alerts the rest of the group, is it there long enough? Because I've seen women lining up outside stores to clean out whatever they have whenever they have it. Has there been a success rate in getting to it fast enough?
I've actually seen some success stories on the group of moms posting it. And I mean, as soon as it hits the group, a lot of moms are on the lookout, get notifications for it, and they're on their way to the store to get it.
All right. So tell me a little bit about the different types, because, you know, we were talking to the pediatrician mom right before this about the different kinds of formula out there. I'm just going to throw a few up on the screen because there are very specific varieties, and this is just some of them. Soy-based, there's formula for milk intolerance, there's formula for babies who were born premature, there's formula for babies with digestion issues. But are you finding that some of your moms are just, because they can't find the specific one that their babies need, they're resorting to a switch to something else?
I have seen quite a few moms doing that. Luckily, they try to stay within the same type of formula, just a different brand. Like, I know I'm having to do that with him.
Okay, I want to put up a post from your Facebook group. It's a woman who is posting a couple of containers for $30, which is right around the price, if not cheap, for posting these. And she said, you know, she wanted to just to ask anybody if they needed it, she would help to deal with shipping as well. And then there was this post that was so sweet, but it was heartbreaking. The little baby's pictures there, and the mom says, "Hi, mamas, we're looking for sensitive formula of any brand except for blank." We blocked out the brand name. "If you find any, please let me know. I will Venmo Apple Pay you if you're able to find it in a store." How often are they successful?
They're pretty successful most of the time, but like the comments that I see that people are putting on there, they're like, "I found it," or "I, you know, I had luck and I got to it in time."
Well, you're an angel for having started this, and I know that there's at least 400 moms who would say the very same thing right in your state, and probably thousands more who are watching right now. So, Amber Sanders, thank you so much. Appreciate it, and good luck. Good luck finding it for little Chevy. He's so sweet. He was so well behaved.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you having me on here to talk about it.
You betcha. Good luck. Okay, Amber's Facebook group has three important rules: no promotions or spam, respect members' privacy, and this might be the most important one, no hate speech or bullying. That last one's really important because, sadly, that's become a thing. Trolls targeting moms who are in desperate search of formula. Joining me now is Latham Thomas. She's a doula and the founder of Mama Glow, which is a website for everything that healthy moms need. Her client list includes some pretty big-time stars: Alicia Keys, Anne Hathaway, DJ Khaled, Gabrielle Union, and Venus Williams. Okay, Latham, how bad is this troll problem? I couldn't believe it when I heard it, but they're always out there, aren't they?
Yeah, it's really unfortunate that during a time like this where we're in crisis that people are not only having to deal with how to access food for their babies, but also the judgment around feeding choices.
So who are they? Are they mostly men who don't understand lactation issues and breastfeeding, or are they other women who are holier than thou, suggesting how could you feed that to your child? Like, who's the bulk of the trolls?
I think it's a combination of individuals. And I think it's I think how it starts is really someone shares something very personal. This thing is happening to me, and then pile-ons happen. And we see this throughout social media, but I definitely think that some of the places where we see it most are Twitter and Facebook, unfortunately. And a lot of time people are just hoping for safe haven, a place where they can just share or find common ground. And then they're met with people who have really staunch opinions and views. You know, our role as doulas is to be non-judgmental in our support and make sure that people have access to the resources that they need, regardless of what choices they make.
Well, that makes perfect sense. I'm going to put up one of those aforementioned tweets that you were talking about, just so that our audience knows what these stressed out brand new moms who can't find food for their little babies are also having to contend with. So here we go. This is someone who said, I keep seeing men say, quote, just breastfeed to women, speaking about all the real baby formula shortage. So let me just say this, men, please stop, stop. Don't expose how little you understand about this. You just look like a dope. Stop. So enlighten people, Latham, as to why a mom might choose formula over breastfeeding, even though we all know breastfeeding is best.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's multiple reasons. Some of them also are health related. Some people have real health concerns. We know some folks who've had double mastectomies and it's not possible to breastfeed. But there's also social challenges. You know, one in four women go back to work 10 days after having a baby in the United States. And so a lot of people can't even establish breastfeeding. You know, there's social concerns like family members or lack of social support and stress. And then, you know, things like, you know, separation at birth, there's a lot of things that impact feeding supply. And so even folks who really try, and even if they have resources, sometimes it doesn't work out for them. And there are so many factors that that lead up to that. And so I think when people just judge outright, they don't know what someone may be going through. A lot of people very much want to breastfeed their babies and cannot. And there are people who also just, that's their choice. And regardless of whether someone believes it should be one way, it's really anyone's choice to feed their baby in the way that they desire. I think the goal really is to make sure babies are well fed, right? And I think we can all agree on that.
So I had that issue, the well-fed problem. My first baby, no problem. I breastfed him and that was fine. My second baby wanted more and I just didn't have enough. And this little baby was crying and hungry all the time until my mom finally said, snap out of it, give him some extra formula. It's called supplementing. So a lot of moms might be in that boat as well, absolutely through no fault of their own or choice or laziness or anything. In fact, let me tackle some of these topics that have come in some of the communications that, you know, that have surfaced. This one tackles the topic of bonding. Ashley A. writes, I had a friend ask me if I was having trouble bonding with my son because, quote, you're feeding him that stuff. Can you address that?
Yeah, I mean, I think this is really unfortunate because what we understand about bonding is that touch is really important, right? Connection, eye contact, skin-to-skin contact. A lot of people, by the way, who have premature babies aren't able to feed their babies. Some are very much able to pump breast milk and feed their babies that way, but many people rely on formula to feed their babies, especially in the NICU. And the way that they bond is through touch, right? The way that they bond is picking them up, putting them skin to skin. That's how we create oxytocin flow. And that actually generates bonding. And so, you know, the idea that only through milk alone is how you get that is really absurd to say to someone. It is one of the ways that we can also transfer incredible hormones and protection as well as nutrients to our babies. But there's other ways that we do this, and it's through social supports. It's having a safety net of family members. It's having a mom who's not stressed out, a mom who feels well supported and is going through recovery with a system around her. And it's, you know, it's making sure that a baby is held and gets its attention and is and that the people who are caring for that baby are responding to its needs.
Okay, so here's another one, the health debate. This one comes from Brandy B. Brandy writes, my cousin-in-law could not breastfeed at all. She was out at a restaurant feeding her son formula when a lady walked up with a Coke can and said, here, you might as well give him this. My cousin bawled her eyes out. The public shaming is real. Do you have any advice for a mom out there who might find herself in a predicament like this?
I'm first of all having a hard time believing that people are walking up to strangers and doing this. This is actually like appalling. I mean, the most that we should be doing is making sure that, you know, moms feel supported, that they're encouraged. You know, I would say that, you know, not all formulas are equal, right? And so it's certainly not like giving your child Coca-Cola, but not all formulas are equal, which is why so many people source formula outside of the United States and in Europe because of the safety standards. And in the United States, we have different standards for formula here. There are some new innovative mom companies, mom-founded companies, one that I really love called Bobby, that is founded by moms who wanted very much to breastfeed all needed to supplement, or in some cases needed to go straight to formula, and figured out how to design a formula that met safety and efficacy standards, and that also was really nutrient dense to support the needs of modern families. So there are different formulas out there. I think it's important to find the one that works for you, your baby, and your family. And I think it's really important also to know that, you know, the important thing is to make sure that your child is getting nutrients, your child is getting fed, right? I think people don't really understand that, like, infants need to eat constantly. And so this crisis that we're in really impacts people in ways that we cannot understand. Imagine not being able to eat. Like, I mean,
yeah, no, it's big. You really do have to get inside the shoes of these moms, just, you know, every 4 hours to 6 hours needing to fill that bottle again. Last one real quick, laziness. This is from Christina M. She says, she writes, "You didn't even try. This was said by a nurse after I spent an entire night crying my eyes out and feeling like a failure because I couldn't get my newborn to latch." Latching is a big deal, isn't it?
It is. And what I will say is laziness is not a factor, right? There's so much involved in breastfeeding. I nursed my son till he was 3 years old. And yes, there was effort, but I remember going to Old Navy one day and seeing a mom in one of the clothing aisles set up her formula to create a bottle for her baby in the middle of a shopping store, right? In the middle of a store, she was doing this. And I was like, oh my gosh, like how much effort, right, that it takes to find a place to do this. And it had me sit with a different type of empathy, right, for people who had to do this on the go. It takes a tremendous amount of effort to wake up. Breast milk comes out, it's the right temperature already. When you have to get up in the middle of the night, you have to get the right, you know, the bottle has to be at the right temperature. You got to like do a lot to feed a baby. So there's not laziness involved. It is not about laziness. Most of the time it's about, you know, factors in our lives that make it really challenging. And when we say breast is best, we don't really think about what it means for people to actually breastfeed, right? We're not talking about the milk itself. We're also talking about all of the social factors that impact how we can actually breastfeed. There's so many impediments to breastfeeding in this country. So yeah, we need to make it safer.
Boy, for everybody. I wish I had met you a decade and a half ago, Latham Thomas. You and I would have been best friends, let me tell you. You have the best information. Thank you so much for joining me tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
I think we still could be best friends, too. I just love the way you think. All right, so from Terry Bradshaw to Paris Hilton to Scott Kelly, Howie Mandel, plus dozens of other huge success stories, they discovered late in life they had ADHD. Why it is a blessing, not a curse, and how you can harness yours to maybe harness millions. They are some of the most famous people on the planet, and for years they had no idea what was wrong with them. Football sensation Terry Bradshaw, TV star Howie Mandel, rocket scientist Scott Kelly, shoe designer Steve Madden, fitness guru Jillian Michaels, and social media sensation Paris Hilton. When they were kids, few had ever heard of ADHD, but as adults, they've been diagnosed, and they are part of an exploding trend. 4 times the number of adults are being diagnosed with ADHD compared to our children. And if you know how many children are diagnosed, 7 million, you can see why people are really sitting up and taking notice of this. Maybe you struggled in school or were disciplined more than the other kids, or maybe you were shunned by friends. Maybe your grades were low, no matter what you did. Maybe you just knew something was off back when you were a kid. But no matter your age now, there is a way to get answers if you too have ADHD, and more importantly, how ADHD has made some of the most successful people who they are. Ty Pennington says it helped him reach heights he never dreamed of. So what is his secret? How did he capture the magic of his ADHD and then turn it into a fortune? He and the others I mentioned are telling their secrets in a brand new documentary called The Disruptors, and it's streaming right now on Apple TV. And if you or maybe somebody you know and love is living with ADHD or think that maybe after all these years of wondering, you might have it, Ty has a thing or two to tell you, and he's live with me next. It is not just about focus, and it is not just about paying attention either. ADHD is way harder to diagnose than that. Sometimes it shows up in other ways, like defiance and irritability, maybe just an all-around tough time dealing with school, friends, people, employers. As we get better and better understanding ADHD, maybe it is no surprise that more and more adults are being diagnosed with it. 4 times more than at the rate of kids, it turns out. Musician will.i.am from the Black Eyed Peas is one of those adults.
Society didn't do a good job telling you that you have, you know, the ability to focus on many things at once. You're freaking awesome.
Ty Pennington also has ADHD. He is the Emmy Award-winning star of Extreme Makeover Home Edition and HGTV's Battle on the Beach. He's one of many prominent voices in the new documentary, The Disruptors, that's currently streaming on Apple TV. He, along with Terry Bradshaw, Howie Mandel, Scott Kelly, Steve Madden, Paris Hilton, and Jillian Michaels, among many more, they are all sharing how their ADHD actually made them the success stories that they are today. Ty Pennington is here live, along with Nancy Armstrong, who is the producer of this project. Welcome to you both, and thanks so much for being with me. This is a topic that's near and dear to my heart. I really appreciate this.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us on.
Awesome. Okay, Ty, I'm going to start with you. How'd you get involved?
I mean, honestly, I was pretty impressed when I was trying to make a documentary about ADHD because there's just so many families that are dealing with it that a lot of people just didn't realize, and especially for me, who, like, I was probably one of the earlier ones that, but I mean, I wasn't even diagnosed until I was in college, so I already missed high school. So my whole point was just trying to, like, raise awareness to any other kid that's in a family that's just sort of like not understood. And just there's definitely this lack of confidence that can really like derail your life. And so I would definitely say I was one of those. A lot of parents would come up to me and just be like, oh my God, you remind me so much of my child, but like you're somehow successful. And I was like, well, I mean, I found an outlet, you know, that I could focus on. But up until that point, like, I owed my shrink, like, so much in sessions. I was painting his house to pay off my debt. And even he said, wow, you finally found your outlet. I'm like, yeah. But
About that outlet, Ty. I want to know a lot more about that outlet and how ADHD actually ended up as a superpower. But first, Nancy, to you, you have 3 kids. All of them with ADHD. So how did you take sort of that experience with your family and then change it into a documentary that's going to, you know, affect maybe hundreds and thousands and maybe millions of people?
Well, The Disruptors is a film I desperately needed as a mother of 3 children with this diagnosis. Parenting a child with ADHD can just be incredibly challenging and overwhelming. And the biggest problem around ADHD right now is we're still figuring out what it is. And for some reason, it's become really complicated. There's a deep disconnection between what society thinks about ADHD and what we know about it from the decades of research and hundreds, if not thousands, of studies. We know it's neurological. We know it's highly genetic. We know the parts of the brain it affects. So I wanted to gather together the top experts in the world to really, you know, unpack this for us and reframe it once and for all. And then also to follow 5 families that were currently in the struggle of dealing with raising a child with ADHD. And then to assemble some really successful high profile personalities like Ty to talk about their experiences in childhood growing up with ADHD, but also to talk about how they found a path to leverage the strengths of their ADHD brain for incredible success.
Okay, and you really went to town there, too, because holy Dinah, do you ever have a star-studded lineup? So I'm going to ask you about that in a minute, but first back to you, Ty, and that whole superpower business, finding your outlet. You know, will.i.am said it's his superpower, and a lot of the other celebrities are saying, but for the ADHD, I might not be what I am today. So for anybody watching out there who might be adults thinking, gee, maybe that is me, or kids who know it's them and are really worried about success, give them the secret sauce, the magic that you discovered.
It's tough to say. I mean, as I'm sure a mother of three will tell you, like, each case is completely different. But, I mean, my mom used to say that listening to me was like trying to drink from a fire hydrant, right? And so, like, how do you make that your talent? Just, like, blurting out whatever comes out of your face, even though you're having a vision and you think you really know what you're talking about, because you're sort of like three steps ahead of where your brain is at the moment. But, and I still talk like that now. I mean, look at me, I'm like, you know, fragments of a non sequitur. And, but I think what it is that the power that I think I had is, I sort of had, if I took the moment and like put pen to paper or crayon to wall or whatever, creatively, I have, and even in the test I took with my mom, I have a really strong power of the positive and negative. I can see shapes. And so graphically, I'm very, art is my, like, that's my power, like the creative process. But just like any, you know, anybody with ADHD is, you know, maybe you could start a piece of artwork, but who knows if you're going to finish it. But you start a task and you're definitely not going to finish it. But I think if it was in the creative industry, if it was me working with my hands, I would somehow, you know, solve the equation. I would finish the drawing, or at least come close to finishing. And I think that's the other, the thing that's really changed is the fact that once I got diagnosed and medicated, I could actually finish a task. But there's more than that, man. I was playing soccer as a kid and I was okay when I was a child. But like right in the beginning of like early high school, I started growing and had no coordination. But then once I got diagnosed, like in college, like my brain just went, wow. Like I could read the field. I was scoring hat tricks. Even my brother was like, what's happened? I said, I think my brain's finally working. But it's—
So that's a really good point different. You bring up, Ty. And Nancy, maybe you can, because you've just done so much research on this, plus you know all these adult celebrities who have said it made me a success story. When you actually were able to nail them down and get them to do the documentary, did you also learn that they, like Ty, were able to really identify what it was about them and then find a career that fit that? And that's the magic path?
Yeah, I mean, the first thing about ADHD is that, you know, it's something that needs to be managed, but because there are challenges that you do need to manage, but there are also some pretty impressive strengths that need to be accelerated. And if you can find a path in life to amplify those strengths, you know, it can be a big asset. People with ADHD are really creative, like Ty. They're very curious. They're not risk averse. So they take plenty of swings at big opportunities and they see opportunities that other people don't see. A neurotypical person sees the world this way. A person with ADHD sees this, and they can connect dots that people might not think to connect. So they have all of those really great skills. They also have the ability to hyper-focus, so they can shut the whole world out and dive deep into a particular topic for hours and hours and hours. So those are huge superpowers that are not really appreciated, you know, in a K-12 environment. So that's why it's really hard growing up with ADHD.
Well,
but if you can manage your ADHD along the way,
you know. I tell you, we need a whole hour because there's so much information. But in the meantime, for anybody watching right now, I just want to repeat the name of your amazing documentary. It's called The Disruptors. It's currently streaming on Apple TV. And there's going to be a ton more information in there for anybody watching who's like, aha, we're just scratching the surface. Ty Pennington, Nancy Armstrong, thank you so much for being here tonight. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, Ashley.
And thanks for doing the project, Nancy. This is great. Just so much what people need. Okay, still ahead. How can virtual currency cause so much real life pain? While the regular markets are plunging, crypto is in near collapse. The lowdown on the sell-off and how you just might survive it when we come back. Okay, even if you can't get your head around cryptocurrencies or blockchains or virtual wallets, here is some news that we can all understand. The crypto market lost more than $1 trillion of actual value in just the past week. You heard right. $1 trillion wiped off electronic ledgers in just a week. Of course, those investors probably thought they understood crypto. So maybe nobody actually does. Or maybe currencies based on computer algorithms are just hypersensitive to market forces battering the stocks and bonds right now. I know this much. Our national correspondent, Paul Gierke, is on the case. Paul, we are watching, it seems like, a virtual collapse. Or is it? Or is it maybe just a really bad dip?
You know, a more seasoned investor in this space hasn't existed for very long, so they're not too seasoned. But that seasoned investor might just laugh at that question, Ashley, and say, look at some more recent downturns in the not-so-distant past. Look, I don't think that this is the death of crypto, but it's definitely a massive correction. And breaking just this afternoon, U.S. Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen is renewing her calls for regulation in this space. She said this recent meltdown is a, quote, real-life demonstration of the risks. And the investor uncertainty right now all comes from this coin called Luna. At one point, it was one of the 10 most valuable coins, and this week it became basically worthless, and that dragged down all the big names with it. Overnight, Bitcoin was below $26,000, Ethereum below $1,750, and now a whole group of young investors that have been burned by crypto are reevaluating their futures.
Oladapo Odeyeyi is a microbiology student with a wide range of interests. He works as a modeling manager and dabbles in photography. For the last 5 years, he has also invested in cryptocurrency.
Well, for crypto, I've been buying crypto, selling, and making some profits.
He was saving up to get his master's degree when every speculatory investor's nightmare came true.
I checked my wallet and seeing it drop down drastically, I can't even sell it out because I don't know. I'm losing everything.
The massive sell-off was prompted by an algorithmic stablecoin called Terra USD losing its peg to the US dollar, which caused its sister coin, Luna, to plummet in value. A stablecoin is a cryptocurrency directly tied or pegged to another currency. It's supposed to stay exactly equal. If something goes wrong and it doesn't, traders can game the market, which is exactly what happened when Terra dropped as low as 29 cents. Oladapo owned 1,000 Luna when the bottom fell out. He watched his digital wallet empty.
From 8,000 to 20.
8 grand to 20 bucks. Luna lost more than 99% of its value. The project was founded in South Korea in 2018, intended to free users from international transaction fees. Instead, it's highlighting an inherent risk of unregulated markets, the chance you might lose everything.
It's crypto. You can't do anything.
Some of Oladapo's fellow investors are feeling helpless, including one who put in money from selling her house.
One of my friends, I think I have someone who even almost committed suicide. She took some poisonous stuff and it almost killed her.
As for Oladapo, he's going to keep investing in crypto, albeit with a heightened sense of scrutiny.
I'll just try and be more careful, and whenever I see a fluctuation, just sell off immediately.
Answer.
Sadly, I've seen a lot of accounts similar to Oladapo's perusing cryptocurrency forums, people threatening self-harm. But if you're looking for a silver lining, look no further than billionaire Mark Cuban, who still very much believes in the cryptocurrency space. He says this recent downturn is similar to the early internet bubble, and the strong will survive.
It's exactly what I was thinking back in the 90s, the big old bubble. But I have a question for you. A lot of the people, it seems, who buy crypto seem like they're not the buy and hold kinds of folks. They seem like they're the quick buck kind of folks. So is that the problem?
Not always the case. There's been this enormous institutional trend in investing in Bitcoin and Ethereum, especially the blue chippers. I did a little research on this tonight, Ashley, and found that typically crypto is held a lot shorter than stocks. The average hold time is in the months rather than the years. And those blue chips like Bitcoin and Ethereum are generally held longer. But yeah, I mean, some of these coins have gone up thousands of percent overnight, and people want to make a quick buck. It's the modern gold rush.
I don't blame him. Okay, you're officially the crypto reporter now. I'm going to ask you back a whole bunch more times. Paul Gierke, thanks so much.
What have I done? Thanks for having me on, Ashley.
Good to have you. Okay, she managed to grab attention at every stage in her career, and that's saying a lot because Madonna has been at her career for 40 years. But she may have just topped everything else that she's ever done. Here's a hint. Porn, vagina trees, and an eye-popping series of NFTs. That's coming up next. Love her or hate her, you have got to hand it to her. Madonna has done it again. 40 years into a sensational career, she has found a way to reinvent herself and be top of the news in a glaring headline. This time, she's releasing this. Some real sexy NFTs, non-fungible tokens that feature a digital Madonna in all her glory, a.k.a. her birthday suit. She's giving birth to various things from a tree, wow, to a whole bunch of butterflies in a dystopian setting, to mechanical centipedes out there in the forest. And before you roll your eyes, you should know that this 63-year-old pop star has teamed up with a famous graphic artist named Beeple to create these tokens. And every single penny that they're earning is going to laudable charities all around the world that help mothers, including the Voices of Children Foundation that helps women and children in Ukraine, and the City of Joy that helps survivors of severe violence. So if we're keeping score, even though those images are pretty crazy, and Dan Abrams had his thing to say, I am Team Madonna on this one. A, it's real hard to reinvent yourself and be top of the news no matter what. And this is a very creative way. Said, done. Thanks for watching, everybody. Nice to have you here tonight. Time now to turn things over to Special Report with Leland Vittert and Marnie Hughes.